Have the prayer for eventide. This day is almost gone. When night and morning meet, it will be only an unalterable memory. So let no unkind word and careless doubting thought, no guilty secret nor neglected duty, no wisp of jealous fog ever becloud its passing. Now, in token of our deep and abiding love, we would lay aside all disturbing thoughts, all misunderstandings, all unworthiness. If things have gone wrong, let us none of us lift an accusing finger. Who is to blame is not important, only how shall we set the situation right? And so, serving and being served, loving and being loved, we shall make this a peaceful haven where we, the children of God, shall live harmoniously, joyfully singing his name and glories, till we merge our little selves in his eternal being and existence. Peace, bliss, amen. Well, welcome back to everybody as we take this journey with Papa. Chapter 20. Making inquiries, they're in Yanzi. Yanzi? Yanzi, I think it's pronounced. Making inquiries, they straightway went to a dharmashala, and resting here for some time, at the suggestion of the Saduram, directed their steps to the bazaar and obtained some flour, etc., from a charitable merchant. The Saduram prepared a few rotis and dal curries. After finishing dinner, they remained in the dharmashala till evening. Then the Saduram proposed to move toward the station, which was reached before dark. The same ticket clerk whom Ram had brought in touch with them the previous night was found at the gate. Ram Dass went to him and requested him to allow them to proceed to Bombay by the night train. Although at first he consented to do so, when the train arrived at 2 a.m., he refused them admission to the platform. It was all Ram's wish, so they had to spend another night in the station, which meant cold stiffening and swelling of the limbs for a second time. Next morning, they retraced their steps again to the city. The state of the Saduram's mind at this time was most miserable. Coming to the same dharmashala, they met two Tagul sadhus. The Saduram, after a short talk with these sadhus, at once made up his mind to give up the company of Ram Dass and join them. It was again all Ram's making. His ways are always inscrutable. Total submission to him means no anxiety, no fear, no pain, and all assurance. About half an hour later, Ram Dass was left alone in the company of Ram, whose name he was uttering without cessation. The new sadhus and the Saduram, who was so long his guide and foster mother, as it were, departed from the dharmashala. Ram Dass was meditating on Ram, unconcerned at the severance of the Saduram's company, for complete resignation to the will of Ram had deprived him of all sense of anxiety and cares of the future. Thus time was passing in the Ram Bhajan when two friends, coming up to him, dropped into his hands 2 1-anna pieces, suggesting that he might purchase some eatables from the bazaar and break his fast. Accordingly, he directed his steps to the bazaar. Here, while purchasing some eatables from a sweetmeat shop, he felt at his elbow someone pulling on him. He had now received the eatables. Turning round, he heard the friend address him. Maharaj, a Seth desires you to go over to him. Ram Dass instantly followed the friend, who led him into a shop wherein were piled up wheat bags. As he entered the place, a friend came up from inside the shop and fell prostrate at the feet of Ram Dass, the mendicant. Rising up with folded hands, the friend requested him to accept bhikshas at his house that day. This friend was the merchant who had sent for him. He was then asked to sit on a thick white mattress called gadi, with cushions to lean against, but Ram Dass was a humble slave of Ram, so he preferred to sit on the floor. Here again he was offered a gunny bag on which he sat. After dinner, the kind-hearted merchant sat beside him and put him some questions in regard to his movements, etc., which were all duly answered in terms of Ram's will, which was alone his sole guide. He further told the Seth of Ram Dass's, of Ram's kindness and love for his bhaktas, and how he who trusts Ram knows no sorrow and can be happy under all circumstances. To have Ram's name on the lips means joy. Pure joy, nothing but joy. The merchant was visibly affected to hear these words, for he was himself a great Rama Bhakta. Sitaram, Sitaram was always on his tongue. After a few minutes' talk, the Seth entreated Ram Dass to remain with him for some days. He said that Ram Dass's body, which was then in a most neglected condition, required to be taken care of, and that Ram had specifically sent Ram Dass to him for this sole object. It must be related here that the clothes in which he was clad were all rags. Mahadev Prasad, such was the name of the merchant in whose care he was placed by Ram, provided him with new clothes dyed in Garuna, and every care was taken of him by this kind host. Mahadev became extremely fond of him. At nights, in spite of remonstrations, Mahadev Prasad would sit beside the sleeping Ram Dass and press his feet. Oh, the kindness he showered on poor and humble Ram Dass was unbounded. Oh, Ram, it was thee who was doing it all through that friend. Oh, Ram, how good, how loving thou art. Weep on, Ram Dass, in silence weep on. Weep not in sorrow, but in joy, because Ram's grace is upon you. For a month he was detained by Mahadev with him. Throughout the day and night he would not give up the company of Ram Dass. At his request, Ram Dass was explaining to him the meaning of some shlokas from the Bhagavad Gita, and with the help of the small understanding with which he was gifted by Ram, and Mahadev in return would read out and explain that monumental work of Tulsidas, the Hindi Ramayana. All people in his house were also very hospitable and kind to Ram Dass. To prevent any cold affecting the heart of the frail-bodied Ram Dass, Mahadev got a tight woolen jacket made for him. Oh, Ram, how kind of thee! When thou art out to show thy fondness and love for thy slave, thou shamest the very human mother who gave birth to Ram Dass's body. Such is thy unlimited love. During Ram Dass's stay at Jhansi, Mahadev Prasad took him on a visit to two Mohammedan saints. The first was an aged saint named Mirzaji. He might have been over 80 years of age, lean and bent. He would not speak, but there was a cheerful twinkle in his eye. In short, he was a mere baby, simple, innocent, and free. Mahadev Prasad had brought some eatables with him, which he thrust into the saint's mouth bit by bit. There was not a single tooth in the saint's mouth. The eatables were soft sweets. He chewed and swallowed them unconcernedly. He seemed to recognize nobody. His eyes had an absent and vacant look, though bright. He was visited twice. On the second occasion, he was found sitting on the grounds outside his cottage, quietly tearing to bits stray pieces of paper scattered around him. Chapter 21. Before I read this, I'm going to read the points to focus on as we listen to the second of this next chapter. And it's called Meditation the Only Way. In spite of being outwardly immersed in activities, we should endeavor to love and serve as much as possible. Follow the teaching of Mahatmas rather than imitating their actions. Meditation is not merely sitting. It is the process of going within to the source of all sources. It can also be done while being active in our daily life. Meditation, the inward journey, can alone give us true peace. When the mind is properly tamed and turned within, we can obtain objectiveless happiness. When dealing with events and individuals, try to connect them with the source. Solitude aids inward journey to the source of all sources. Observations and experiences offer us immense possibilities for self-improvement. Try to actualize what has been observed. So hold those in your mind as we, when I say hold those in your mind, allow God to point those points out as I read this next chapter. Meditation, the only way. The other saint, whose name was Pirji, was comparatively a younger man than Mirjadi. He would speak and reply to questions put to him. Mahadev asked Pirji whether happiness could be found in the samsaric life in which he was placed. At his question, Pirji seemed to have roused himself a little. His voice was firm and decisive. "Well, brother, as I have told you several times, there is only one remedy, and that is give up. Give up the miserable life of the world and going up to a solitary place, meditate upon God, who alone can give you the happiness you are after. This is the only way and no other. O Ram, thou hast brought thy slave in touch with these saints in order to confirm his faith in thee. The first saint teaches the state of one who has reached thee. The second, how to reach thee. The kind Mahadev was taking him in the nights to various bhajan parties in the city when Ram Dass told him one day that it seemed to be Ram's wish that he should make a move. He was quite unwilling to part from Ram Dass. To avoid an immediate contingency of a departure, he escorted him to a village called Ochara, which was about 6 miles from the city. The place is famous for the temple of Sri Ramcharanda. Leaving him at this place, and after arranging for his food with a mother living near the temple, Mahadev returned to the city. His parting words were, You may remain here as long as you like, or as long as Ram wishes you to remain. When he desires you to leave the place, kindly come back to me at Jhansi. When left alone in the contemplation of the divine guide, protector, and mother Ram, Ram Dass wandered on the bank of the beautiful river of the place. On walking for about 2 miles, he came upon a number of samadhis or tombs, some very old and dilapidated, over which were erected tall conical turrets that shot high up in the air. He understood on inquiry in the village later that they were the graves of women who performed sati, a custom prevailing in the olden days. This place is now used as a cremation ground. The sight is full of the trees, and a beautiful calm reigns over the place. He decided, as prompted by Ram, to occupy one of the tombs for a retreat. For 8 days he remained at this place. Only for about an hour at midday he would go to the temple and receive the rations prepared by the old mother, who consisted of a few saltless rotis and boiled potatoes. The whole night he would sit up for Ram Bhajan in that tomb. Nights were spent in ecstasy. Ram's presence was felt in the very air he was breathing. In the mornings, when he was repeating aloud the charming mantra Om Shri Ram Jai Ram Jai Jai Ram, the birds of the air, small and big, and squirrels would alight on the parapet wall and would listen eagerly and with rapt attention to the sound of the great Pravanam Om. In the evening, the same sound Om would work like magic upon the goats and the bullocks that came near this tomb for grazing. They would raise their heads, pricking up their ears, stand still and drink in the sound. O Ram, it is proved beyond any doubt that thou resideth in the heart of all creatures. The sleeping souls of the birds of the air and the beasts of the plains are awakened at the call of Ram's glorious voice. Kate, would you lead us in some Ram Nam?
Yes, I will.
Michelle, would you turn on that light? I think it's on.
Om Shri Ram Jai Ram Jaya Jaya Ram Om Shri Ram Jaya Ram Jaya Jaya Ram
Om Shri Ram Jai Ram Jaya Jaya Ram Shri Ram Jai Ram Jai Jai.
I'm going to raise it a little bit. Om Om Shri Ram Jai Ram Jai Jai Ram Om Shri Ram Jai Ram Jai Jai Ram
Om Shri Ram Jai Ram Jai Jai Ram Om Shri Ram Jai Ram Jai Jai
Om Shri Ram Jai Ram Jai Jai Ram Om Shri Ram Jai Ram Jai Jai Ram
Om Shri Ram Jai Ram Jai Jai Ram Shri Ram Jai Ram Jai Jai Ram
Om Shri Ram Jai Ram Jai Jai Ram
Om Shri Ram Jai Ram Jai Jai Ram
Om Shri Ram Jai Ram Jai Jai Ram Om Shri Ram Jai Ram Jai Jai Ram Om Shri Ram Jai Ram Jai Jai Ram
Om Shri Ram Jai Ram Jai Jai Ram Shri Ram Jai Ram Jai Jai Ram
Om Shri Ram Jai Ram Jai Jai Ram
Om Shri Ram Jai Ram Jai Jai Ram
Om Shri Ram Jai Ram Jai Jai Ram Om Shri Ram Jai Ram Jai Jai Ram.
Om Shri Ram Jai Ram Jai Jai Ram.
Om Shri Ram Jai Ram Jaya Jaya Ram. Om Shri Ram Jaya Ram Jaya Jaya Ram.
Om Shri Ram Jai Ram Jai Jai Ram. Shri Ram Jai Ram Jai Jai Ram.
Om Shri Ram Jai Ram Jaya Jaya Ram. Om Shri Ram Jaya Ram Jaya Jaya Ram.
Om Shri Ram Jai Ram Jaya Jaya Ram. Shri Ram Jai Ram Jaya Jaya Ram.
Om Shri Ram Jai Ram Jai 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 Jai Ram.
Om Shri Ram Jai Ram Jai Jai Ram.
Om Shri Ram Jai Ram Jai Jai Ram. Om Shri Ram Jai Ram Jai Jai Ram. Om
Shri Ram Jai Ram Jai Jai Ram. Shri Ram Jai Ram Jai Jai Ram.
Om Shri Ram Jai Ram Jai Jai Ram. Om Shri Ram Jai Ram Jai Jai Ram.
Om Shri Ram Jai Ram Jai Jai Ram. Shri Ram Jai Ram Jai Jai Ram.
Om Shri Ram Jai Ram Jai Jai Ram. Om Shri Ram Jai Ram Jai Jai Ram.
Om Shri Ram Jai Ram Jai Jai Ram. Shri Ram Jai Ram Jai Jai Ram.
We look at Papa's life. Swamiji admonishes us not to do what he did, but to take his teachings and bring them into our own lives. And so we aren't all called upon to leave our families, our homes, and our work and cast our lot with God the way that Papa did. He was a unique soul in the world. But we are asked to cast off the attachment to these things and to live in the world, but not of it. So we remain unattached to our station in life, to our relationships, to our belongings. If they're taken from us, we know that God will present something better or that we'll no longer be in need of them. And so we release our identity and our identification with anything that is not our relationship with the universal, with the wholeness, with the oneness of God. Papa teaches us that solitude and meditation are ways to accomplish these things. And again, we don't need to go away to do that. We find solitude in the quietness of our own being, in the Himalayas of our own being, in the meditation cave of our own body temple, by quieting the mind and surrendering the thoughts, by allowing for space and silence and solitude within our own minds. Solitude meaning no other thoughts, only the one. Even the thought of thoughts we let go of. And we're taught that Ram Nam, whatever mantra, whatever songs, help clean out the mind, the dross and the detritus, the sound, the vibration, the ancient Sanskrit words are used, because the ones who have come before us have cleared the path. And these vibrations connect us to that, to those who have gone before. Chapter 22, Ram, the Friend of the Poor. During his visit to the villagers tried to dissuade Ram Dass from staying in that jungle at night, as they warned him of the tigers and other wild animals, because the place occupied by him formed part of a dense and extensive forest. But when the all-powerful Ram was there to save him, where was fear for him and from whom? Ram is pervading everywhere, in all things, in all beings, in all creatures. He continued there for 8 nights when he received the command from Ram to move on. So think of a fear that you've been hanging on to, and imagine the complete strength that comes from God, whether it's a fear of how something will be accomplished, fear of a relationship that's failing, a fear of a want that feels like a need, fear of old age, disease, and death. Allow God to come in as Papa did and clear away all fear. It's waiting for us, that fearless state. A small incident which took place here has to be chronicled at this stage. One day when he was passing the small bazaar at this place, with his loda in hand, he felt thirsty. He now approached, as he walked, a number of small low huts on one side of the road. Going up to one of them, at its entrance, he found an old mother sitting. He begged of her to give him some water in his loda. The old mother shook her head and said, "Maharaj, you cannot take water at my hands." "May Ram Dass know the reason for this objection?" inquired Ram Dass. "The simple reason is," put in the mother, "I belong to a very low caste. To be brief, I am a barber woman." "What of that?" said Ram Dass, nothing surprised. "You are Ram Dass's mother all the same. Kindly satisfy the thirst of your son." She was highly pleased at this reply, and going in brought out a seat for him and her water vessel, out of which she poured some water into his loda. He quenched his thirst, occupying the seat so kindly offered by her. Now the old mother said that she was utterly miserable, left alone in the world. She spent all her days and nights in pain, fear, and anxiety. Ram Dass then reassured her, Oh, Mother, there is no cause for fear and anxiety or for fear of loneliness when there is Ram to protect us all. Ram is always near us. But a poor, weak-minded woman like myself does not possess any faith in Ram because I am a sinner. So saying, the mother burst into tears. You shall have faith, kind mother, by the grace of Ram. Don't despair. Ram is always the friend of the poor and the humble, said Ram Dass. Then show me the way, asked the old mother. Repeat the one name Ram at all times of the day and at night when you are awake. You may be sure that you will not feel lonely or miserable as long as you are uttering that glorious name. Where this name is sounded or meditated upon, there resides no sorrow, no anxiety, nay, not even death. Saying thus, Ram Dass started to go. When she begged him to visit her again the next day, as desired by her, he went to her hut again the following day at about the same time. Well, mother, how do you do? Was his question. There was a cheerful smile on the face of the mother. She said that she had acted upon his advice and was finding herself much relieved from fear and cares. Then she offered him some laddus, which she said she got from the sweet meat shop. Mother, this is not what Ram Dass wants. He wants something prepared by your own hands, said he. At this she went in and got for him a piece of roti or bread made by her, which he ate with no small amount of pleasure. Later he saw her once again when she was busy uttering Ram Ram. And from Swami. Every incident in life has a hidden purpose behind it. There's something in it that we have to learn. When we take up this chapter, Ram, the friend of the poor, the first and foremost thing is that we may be casually trying to get in touch with someone, contact somebody, but actually it is not casual. There is a hidden purpose of the Almighty in making us have that contact. Before reading this, we were not aware, but after reading this chapter, we became aware. Now that memory has to be stamped in our heart. That is the take-home message from this chapter. He was walking. He wanted a cup of water. He saw a woman. He asked her for water. She said she belongs to some caste. Normally in those days, untouchability was prevalent, so she was reluctant to give water. Papa said that all are equal. You are also a form of God. Ram Dass's mother, all those things are there, okay? It may be relevant today. It may not be relevant. We don't know. But what is relevant is that mother was passing through terrible stress. She was starving for love. And we remember, right? She was alone. So she was highly tensed. She started crying. So Papa said, you are not alone. That word we have to keep on remembering. Companionship. He has enjoyed the companionship of Ram, so he spontaneously mentions, you are not alone, he is with you. All you have is to remember him. Naturally, the mother said, I cannot understand all these things. So he said, you chant Ram. We should not limit ourselves to theories. We should try to apply what we read, hear, and learn about practical life. What is the take-home message for us? Every incident that we label as casual is not casual. There is a hidden purpose behind it. There is something in it that we have to take note of. Not only that, you will be able to share your thoughts authentically only based upon your own experience. Otherwise, it's bookish knowledge, what we call academic intellectual, It will not have a deep impact. The moment he said, you are not alone, he is with you, all that you have to do is remember him, it had its impact. So the message is that whatever we are trying to master anything, we should not limit only to bookish knowledge, hearing knowledge, reading knowledge. No. Only when this knowledge becomes a part of our life will the sharing have its desired effect. God is our eternal, ever reliable companion. Seek him within. Sadhana is a means to become aware of his companionship. As a spiritual aspirant, Papa is clearly telling us that we should keep on asserting to ourselves that you are not alone. Even the very sense of individuality, the experiences you're going through, are there because he is there in you. Your job is to become aware. Your struggle is to become aware. Your sadhana is to become aware. Your austerity is also to become aware. When you have tasted that companionship, and when a fellow traveler is suffering, and then when you share, it will be a positive impact. So before we share something authentically, we must have direct experience. In the last chapter for tonight, chapter 23, God never punishes. Listen to that. God never punishes. I asked God about the idea of testing and that God tests us, that we're put to the test. And it came back clearly that it's not a test to see if we fail, but a test to see how far we've come. So it's an assessment. It's to see if we're strengthened enough, like testing steel. And so don't ever think when you feel tested, it's because God's trying to bring you up short. It's to see how much you've progressed and for yourself to learn how much you've progressed. So it's never an idea of punishing. But God never punishes. By Ram's command, Ram Das came back to Jhansi, where Mahadev Prasad welcomed him most heartily and pressed him to spend a few more days with him. At this time, Ram brought him into contact with more than a dozen friends who were all very kind and hospitable to him. Of these, one young friend named Ram Kinkar was extremely kind. One day, in the course of a conversation, he heard that on the Himalayas there were two shrines, Kedarnath and Badrinath. And the path leading to these places was very difficult, and also the cold there was very intense. Oh, Ram, it was all your suggestion. For him, there was always a fascination for dangerous journeys and perilous places. Kedarnath, he had read of it in the splendid writings of the great Mahatma, Swami Ramatirtha. His mind was made up. Ram prompted, and the resolution was sealed that he should visit these shrines, however difficult the path that led to them. He expressed Ram's wish to his friends, Mahadev and others, who valued his frail body so dearly, did not at all first appreciate the idea. They said the journey was a terrible one, and it would prove so especially to Ram Das, whose body was so weak and emaciated. He replied, Ram has given his fiat, and Ram Das obeys, placing full trust in him. The burden is on Ram to see that he is taken care of. Even if his body were to drop off at the will of Ram, he would not grumble. He will then be Ram's entirely. Go he must. At once Ram Kinkar, the young friend, proposed to follow him on his journey to Kedarnath and Badrinath. So he had to remain at Jhansi for some days at the request of these friends, which gave Ram Kinkar sufficient time to make his preparations for the journey. Some other incidents in connection with his stay at Jhansi have to be narrated here. because he describes his pilgrimage to the Himalayas. Before he describes his pilgrimage to the Himalayas. After the resolution was made, he was taken over by Ram Kinkar, who kept him in a Ram Mandir near his own house and carefully looked after his personal wants. In this Mandir, there was a Pujari known as Pandaji. Oh, Pandaji, how very kind you were. At midday, every day, Ram Dass would saunter out in the hot sun and walk in the streets of Jhansi for 2 or 3 hours. The heat of the sun at midday in that season was very severe, but he would not mind it. Observing this one day, Pandaji, who was treating him as a child, warned him thus, "Look here, Maharaj. You are every day going out midday and wandering around in the hot sun. Your head, which is clean shaven, is always uncovered. If you are obstinate, I shall have to lock you up in the temple before I go out." With this threat, an indication of his great love for Ram Dass, he would press him to sleep in the afternoon and would not leave the mandir for midday meals until he saw Ram Dass asleep. "Oh, Ram, how kind thou art." One day during his midday walks, Ram Dass got thirsty, and he discovered on the way a well at which some mothers were drawing water. He went up to the place and requested one of them to give him some water to quench his thirst. In reply, the mother who was asked for water said, "Maharaj, I am a Mohammedan, and you being a Hindu monk, it is not proper that you should accept water at my hands." "Oh, mother," replied he, "Ram Dass knows no caste distinctions. He finds in you that universal mother, Sita, as he finds in all women. Therefore, do not hesitate to provide your son with some water." The mother was strangely surprised at this reply, washed the water pot thoroughly, and drawing water afresh, poured it in the hollow of his hands, and he drank as much water as he wanted. Then he continued his walk. For about 10 days he was staying in the Ram Mandir, and during evenings a number of friends of the city would come and put him various questions about Ram, and he would try to satisfy them by such replies as were prompted him by Ram himself. On one occasion a certain friend came up specifically to have a discussion with him on a religious point. His first question was, "Who are you?" "I am Ram Dass," was the simple reply. "No, you speak a lie there," retorted the friend. "You are Ram himself. When you declare you are Ram Dass, you do not know what you say. God is everywhere and in everything. He is in you, and so you are he. Confess it right away." "True, dear friend, God is everywhere," replied Ram Dass. "But at the same time, it must be noted that God is one. And when he is in you and everywhere around you, may I humbly ask, to whom are you putting this question?" After reflecting for a time, the friend was driven to say, "Well, I have put the question to myself." This reply was given as a desperate attempt to reconcile his first contention. If he would say that the question was put to Ram Dass, there was a clear sense of duality accepted by the disputant himself, "I and you." "As a matter of fact," put in Ram Dass, "Ram does not speak. The moment he speaks, he is not Ram. Speech creates always a sense of duality, the speaker and the man spoken to. Ram is one and indivisible. It is sheer ignorance for a man whose ego is a great obstruction for his complete realization of the oneness of God to say that he is God." The friend persisted for some time, more to uphold his argument, and eventually gave it up. At the desire of Ram Dass, who liked to stay for some days in a retired place, the friend at Jhansi took him to a garden about a mile away from the city, where there was a small shed. Here he lived for some days, visited every evening by a number of friends. Here again a schoolmaster came for a discussion. He belonged to Arya Samaj, started by the great saint Swami Dayana Saraswati. This friend, in the course of a talk, became very hot and excited. The point was about the Shuddhi movement set afoot by Swami Sradhanandaji. Ramdas was clearly opposed to the movement, as he is, in fact, opposed to every effort on the part of anybody to create differences in religious faiths. That all faiths lead to the same goal is a most beautiful and convincing truth. At the close of the discussion, the friend exceeded the limits of decent talk. However, Ramdas was cool and collected by the grace of Ram. At parting, he asserted the friend that he loved him most dearly, in spite of any objectionable words used by him. Next day, about the same time, this friend came again in a great hurry. He could scarcely talk. He could only whisper. His throat had choked up. His condition was pitiable. "Oh, Maharaj," he explained, falling at the feet of Ram Dass, "God has punished your slave for having used rough words to you yesterday. See how my throat is choked and I cannot speak out properly?" "Oh, friend, Ram Dass is really sorry to hear this, but be assured of this. God never punishes. God is love and is always kind. Our own doubts are our enemies and create a lot of mischief. The so-called evil is of our own making." At once, pulling out Ram Dass's right hand, the friend rubbed the palm on his throat, and strange to say, his throat cleared and he began to talk more clearly, and in a few minutes he was all right. "Behold, Maharaj, how powerful you are," he cried exuberantly. "You make a mistake, dear friend," replied Ram Dass. "Ram Dass is a poor slave of Ram, possessing no power at all. Your faith alone has cured you and nothing else." From the time onward, the friend became very much attached to him and was very kind. "O Ram, thy ways are so wonderful that Ram Dass gets utterly bewildered at times." The friends at Yanzi, whom we met daily in that city, were all very charitable in disposition. Especially were they kind and hospitable to sadhus. When he was living with Mahadev Prasad, he found his friend a pattern of charity and humility. Mahadev would never send away a hungry man from his door without feeding him. He would forgo his own meal to satisfy a hungry man. His heart was so soft and so tender. Mahadev's humility was exemplary. Ram certainly gave Ram Dass the society of this friend so that he might know what true charity and humility meant in actual practice. Ram Kinkur, the young friend who accompanied him on his pilgrimage to the Himalayas, made it a rule to utilize about 10% of his own salary for charity. This is really a beautiful hint for all. While speaking of charity, the ideal of charity followed by the householder of northern India is indeed very noble and lofty, the ideal of the ancients, that the householder has no right to exist as such if he does not share his food every day with a hungry man of no means, such as a beggar or a sadhu. In fact, it is declared that a man assumes, I won't even try that word, with the specific object of carrying out his noble idea. There are found some, and I think it's householders, who would not wait for a guest to turn up, but would go seeking for one in the streets, in temples, or in dharmashalas. Such is the piety of the householders. Ram Dass's experience in southern India was also full of incidents in which charity played a most laudable part. In fact, the whole of India is a great land of charity.
Mm.
And Swamiji's recap, when handling problems, try to rise higher than the individual level so the ego doesn't dominate the interaction. God has made physical and spiritual laws that govern the entire manifestation. Whenever some law is violated, the consequence is experienced, which we label as punishment. Therefore, punishment is self-inflicted. I love how Papa dealt with that, because it would be so easy to say, yes, you got what you deserved. And for him to say, God would never punish you. And to help us see it as our own understanding that what we've done is wrong. And to take that consequence and use it for our own growth. Whenever something commendable is done through us, let us try to be aware that he, the activating principle, deserves the praise and not us. We're just the pen in God's hand. Charity is a way to pay back for all that we are receiving from Mother Nature and society. It is a means to expand our love circle. That was Swami Satchidananda's way of evaluating how you've done for the day. Did your circle of love expand today? Isn't that a beautiful thought? Ever expanding circle of love. Anybody have any comments? Anything stand out that they'd like to share?
Well, I was thinking about feeding, the part about feeding hungry people. I was downtown the other day and a man wrapped in a big red blanket approached my car as soon as I parked the car. And I just shook my head no and left my window up, because I find it really scary when I'm approached by, you know, homeless men especially. And so I feel like, oh, I needed to see that person as wrong. But I don't know, you know, if you're a female, is there any excuses or any, like, I know if I'm God, realized I would have no fear at all.
And you can, I think in those
I
kinds
prayed
of,
for him. I did pray for him to get some help.
And I think we can, without putting ourselves into a physical, a place where we physically feel unsafe, we can still make eye contact. We can smile. We can acknowledge the humanity of a person in that moment without rolling down the window or giving money or anything. But our shame makes us look away. And our fear makes us look away. And so if we can, when someone is reaching out to us, whether we can help them in the way that they're asking or not, or whether we choose to help them, or whether we feel directed to help them or not, we can stop and see, we can mentally namaste, we can see the light of God in that person. And we can let them see that we see the light of God in them. And so to just, and they may look away in shame. They may. Or they may smile radiantly like the woman at the co-op did today when I smiled and waved at her. We can always offer them the food of the spirit. No need to put yourself into a place that you feel vulnerable. We don't want that's not good for us or the person, the other person. But to create as much distance as you need to be able to really see that spark of God. Hi, Peter.
What I used to have a lot less than I have now, I used to give more.
Yeah. That's very common.
And I noticed that.
Yeah.
And I don't like it.
Yeah. Yeah. When you're closer to that level of poverty, it's easier to see. It's either easier to see people's distress. It's easier to understand it, and so we're more likely to give.
And I was also working closely with
yeah.
people in poverty at that time. So, and I was closer to it myself.
Yeah.
Hi, Jill.
Hi, Peter.
You know, I just wanted to comment real quickly on sort of this underlying feeling in all of what you're reading about Ram Dass and his experiences. There's this underlying sweetness that's almost overwhelming. And he talks about that. He talks about people being so sweet and so kind to him that he can't even believe it. And I think, you know, we look around for all these little hallmarks of God experience. And to me, that's been a common theme. When I first met Mother and I was very young and I'd visit her at her apartment, she was just unbelievably sweet. And I, you know, a lot of people talk about how tough Mother was, and she sure could be. She sure had a strong will. But she did so many sweet things that it was so humbling, it almost made you want to cry. And then when I met Swami Satchitananda, he, all the pictures that I'd see, kind of had a frown, and he looked pretty stern to me. And when I met him, there was this just overwhelming sweetness, and
yeah.
I couldn't believe how nice he was. And then when I go to the farm and I'm just wanting to kind of hang out, and they, you know, bring you a little something to eat, or they're, you know, there's just, it's the same feeling. And I think that this is, I'm beginning to think, I know it's been a lot of years, so maybe beginning, but it's, I'm beginning to think this is like a hallmark of God experience, is this sweetness that's, it's kind of unexpected. You don't know why they're treating you so nicely, and you kind of can't believe it. And it's really touching, and it's really humbling. And when you're reading In Quest of God, that's just that's the overall feeling that I get. And it's so unbelievably attractive.
Yeah. It's a dangerous book. God is all sweetness. Thank you, Peter. Well, let's have our closing prayer. And we'll take a break next week. And I think Peter's going to share some things next week. And let's see if I can get the closing prayer.
So next week we'll still meet here?
Yeah, we'll still meet here, but we'll have Peter on the screen instead of me in the chair. Please pray with me. O Heavenly Father,
Heavenly Father,
Divine Mother,
Divine Mother,
I feel the wonder and the beauty of thy glorious presence in every part of my body. My heart is bursting with my love for thee. I kneel in adoration at thy feet and surrender myself to thee. I feel the power of thy perfection surging in every cell of my body. My mind and my intelligence are radiant with thy healing light. My soul is filled with the ecstasy and bliss of my communion with thee. I and my Father are one. Blessed Spirit, I am He.
Amen. Thank you, Jill.
Thank you all for coming. We'll just end with that and not have a more wrong. How do you?